Chiefs 3 of 4 on third down. They have third down and goal here at the 1 yard line. Mahomes out throws it left, caught, touchdown! Kansas City, Rashee Rice with the touchdown, and the Chiefs have their first TD of the year. Mahomes with a pocket, patient, and finds the SMU rookie. First down and goal to go at the 4. Chiefs have one timeout left. 37 seconds. Game tied at 7. Mahomes takes the snap. Side engine near side. Caught. Touchdown. Kansas City. Wichita, Kansas. Taste the sweet nectar of the end zone. Blake Bell. Only his second career touchdown. And the Chiefs take the lead at 13-7. Third down and 6 for the Chiefs at their own 46. 14-7 Kansas City. 4 minutes deep into the third quarter. Wide blitz coming, and a pass is going to be intercepted off a deflection off Tony. Coming back to the near side, this is going to be a pick 6 for the Detroit Lions. A pick 6 by rookie Brian Branch of Alabama off the arm of Kadarius Tony. Detroit 21, Kansas City 20. Only the second loss in the opening week of the season for the Kansas City Chiefs in the Andy Reid era.
And that's how it ended last night. The Chiefs lose their season opener to Detroit Lions 21-20. We're going to talk a lot more about that game. We'll hear from Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid. We'll break it down. Has Kadarius Toney been cut from the team, or is he still on the team? And by the way, you know who should really be sending some kind of gift basket to Kadarius Toney is Sky Moore. Because Sky Moore didn't do anything last night. And if it weren't for Kadarius Toney, we'd be talking about Sky Moore, who I thought was going to take a step forward. And by the way, there's 16 more games, so he could easily still take a step forward. We're going to talk about the game here coming up in a little bit. Also, we'll preview college football. KU, K-State, Nebraska versus Colorado is a big game, of course. U.S. Open continuing to wind down. We got the women's final is set. But we're going to focus a lot on the Chiefs, and we're going to focus a lot on college football. But first, we're going to focus on local sports and then preview high school football. Week 2 is tonight, and we hand it over to Dusty.
Yes, we can tell you the cross-country results from Heston yesterday. I just got the Washington County Invitational results, so I haven't had a chance to really go through those yet. But Heston yesterday locally, it was a good day for Lance Lundeen as he finished their in first place, the senior boys race. They split those up by class. So Lance Lundeen did take first place for that senior boys race at 12:02:90. And he also had a ninth place finish in the sophomore boys race for Brogan Mania Bullets. So you can find the full results for that at ncksports.com. Coming up after the show, I'll have the full results for the Washington County Invitational posted there at ncksports.com as well. I believe I'm still waiting for results from the Stockton Invitational as well yesterday in cross country. So bear with me. I can only do as much as I get help with. So that's what's going on here yesterday with cross-country results for the area. So, again, InstaCastSports.com is always your home for the latest in high school sports here in North Central Kansas. We do have high school football coming up tonight, and look at the schedule first, and then we'll go deeper into the games that are on our station. We'll start things at 5:40 with the Football Express, presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable, previewing the area matchups. And then our games of the week, Katy Country 94, Rock Hills at Thunder Ridge. Also online at katycountry94.com and on Z96.3, the Lake Bullitt Trojan Channel. The Trojans taking on the Southeast Saline Trojans in an NCAA league matchup. Pregame at 6:30, kickoff 7 o'clock for both of those. And then we'll conclude our coverage with the local high school football scoreboard show, brought to you by State Farm Insurance and Bullitt and Osborne at 10:05. Other games in the immediate area tonight in the Northern Plains League, Lakeside hosting Reno County Homeschool. Osborne is at home against Stockton. St. John's Tipton's at Sylvan Lucas. Pike Valley traveling to Lincoln. Southern Cloud welcomes Burton. And the Mid-Continent League, it's Norton at Smith Center. And the NCKL Concordia travels to Abilene. So that's a look at what's going on as far as the immediate area schedule for high school football here tonight. So again, catch everything on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com, Z96.3 The Lake, and the Bullitt Trojan Channel with our games here this evening.
All right, we begin with the game on Z96.3 The Lake, and also online live video stream, ncksports.com, via the Bullitt Trojan Channel, as we have the Battle of Trojans. It's Beloit at Southeast of Saline. Southeast has won 7 of the last 8 meetings, 5 in a row against Beloit. The last 2 have not been particularly close. Southeast has been loaded the last couple of years, and they did lose a very talented senior class. They won over Rock Creek in week 1, 26-7. Beloit with a tough, hard-fought loss to a very good Ellsworth team last week, 22-14. 13. Brad Gober, head coach of Beloit in his seventh year, about Southeast Saline and how their offense a little bit different this season with some different people in the skill position spots.
They're not as big as they've been in the past, we'll put it that way. You know, they still got some guys that have some speed. They don't have the burners they've had. You know, they were blessed with years of Pogue and Murray and his sons, where they were the fastest players in the field against anything they played. And so they don't have necessarily that, but they still have good overall team speed. The quarterback's a different kind of quarterback. He's not a down-the-field type of thrower. He throws the ball kind of funky, but he's very accurate with the short stuff, the intermediate stuff, and you know he brings that dynamic. They're a good squad, and we have to be ready to play.
I've been saying this before the season, and I'll say this again, and you'll probably hear it on the Express coming up tonight at 5:40, previewing all the matchups, brought to you by Cunningham Telephone and Cable. Southeast Saline is the time to get them, I think, is early. I'm not sitting there saying they're going to make it to the state semifinals or be a state championship contender, per se, but I think this is a team that's going to really improve by the end of the year. So I think it'd be behoove Beloit to get the job done. Obviously, that's the goal, going down to Southeast and winning this one tonight. Beloit is probably the bigger team this time around. Many times Southeast, Beloit's bigger than a lot of teams they play, but Southeast has been able to match that physicality, if not be just as big or bigger. They don't have those speedsters in Pogue and Murray, but they still have a solid team, and a lot of those kids got a lot of experience in blowout wins last year in the second half of games. Mitch Gebhardt, head coach of Southeast Saline, who, oddly enough, he's 14 years at Southeast Saline. He's never lost a season opener. He's 14-0, and they kept that streak alive last week with a win over Rock Creek. His thoughts on the battle against Beloit.
You got to be prepared with everything that they do, because they're going to come at you and they're going to go hard. And their kids always play hard. It's always a hard fought football game when we play Beloit. Our kids look forward to it, and I'm sure theirs do also. It's been a great rival. We've played them every year since I've been here, and it's always been a good football game.
So this is an opportunity for Beloit to knock off Southeast Saline and snap a 5-game losing streak to those Trojans. Pregame at 6:30 tonight on Z96.3 Lake, live video stream, ncksports.com, by the Beloit Trojan channel. And also don't forget that you need to download that free Z96.3 Lake app on your smartphone. And we are also online, kdcountry94.com. So I'll have the call from Gypsum tonight for that battle between Southeast Saline and Beloit. Dusty will have an interesting game, I think, up in Kensington, as it is Thunder Ridge hosting Rock Hills. Thunder Ridge coming off that loss in week 1 to Alma, Nebraska, 74-52, and Rock Hills with a big win in week 1 over St. John's Tipton, 32-30. A very exciting game that Dusty was at last week. And Wyatt Flynn, the head coach of the Grizzlies, in his first year, he's 1-0. He should retire. Call it good. Be 1,000%.
I told him that last week.
Yeah. and being a perfect coach and being 1-0. Here's Coach Flynn on slowing down the Thunder Ridge Longhorn rushing attack.
Hit them low, tackle them low. We did a good job last week of flying around to the football and gang tackling, and kind of what we expect to do this week. If we can fly around and get six hats to a ball, I think it'll work out well.
Physical football game tonight. Both teams like to run the football. Joel Struckoff on the Rock Hills run game.
Just a big physical team that's going to try to plow out small yardage against you and then try to hit you with a home run every once in a while with their speed guy. And those teams are really hard to defend. Last year, you know, they had some good sustained drives on us last year. So I think that's just a deal where we have to play really extremely disciplined football and just make the right decisions all the time.
So Rock Hills and Thunder Ridge tonight on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. Dusty and Todd will have the call from Kensington. Thoughts on that one tonight?
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at Thunder Ridge with a game under their belt with all the new guys that they have on this team and learned a lot about themselves, I think, last week against Alma, Nebraska. We know this team can still score points. That was obvious last week. But, defensively, it was their big issue in week 1 a year ago, too, with Alma. So really looking to see Thunder Ridge make quite a bit of improvement this week, being on their home field. The way that they play the game is going to be a little bit different than what Rock Hill saw last week against St. John's Tipton, which St. John's Tipton, kind of, if they can, will spread a little bit and maybe definitely throw more than Thunder Ridge wants to throw. I'm not that Thunder Ridge can throw, obviously. Baker threw for over 132 yards or over 130 with 19 attempts last week. So it's not like all they're going to do is run the football. Mason Baker had a very good start running the ball, too, with 267 yards last week. But they're going to try to mix in the pass with the run more than some of the teams that you might see that are more run-based and run-heavy, and definitely more than Rock Hills is going to do tonight. They had two pass attempts last week and really did everything on the ground, and if they can be that power physical run team, most of their plays are going to be on the ground and maybe hit you with a play action or something in the pass game that's going to surprise you. Thunder Ridge is not going to be surprising when they pass, and so they're going to mix a little bit more. It should be an interesting game. As both coaches said, it will be a physical game. Just with the Thunder Ridge where they're at, I think maybe I'd give them the edge, but boy, Rock Hills is coming in very, very confident after that win last week, so that makes it a little bit tougher to kind of maybe handicap how I think this one's going to come out. It should be a great game tonight again, expecting a four-quarter game here tonight again, and so we'll see how the chips fall and which team comes out on top in this very, very physical game that we're expecting tonight.
All right. And did you go through the whole football schedule?
I went through the media area, yes.
Yeah, so there could be some good games tonight. You know, the St. John's Tipton Sylvan Lucas game is kind of an interesting one to me. And then Lakeside against Reno County Homeschool. I mean, both teams scored 70 in week one, so I'm thinking 84-82 type of game tonight over there in Downs, and the game will be over around 11 o'clock if that were the case, probably.
Yeah, I'm hoping they get these two real high-scoring long games out of the way before I go do their next two games over in Downs. So
it
has the potential to be much like it was last week over there in Downs with a very high scoring game. I don't know how much you can attribute to Pike Valley having a tough game defensively in that game or whatnot, but I don't know anything about Reno County Homeschool because that was the first game they ever played. So Drew Dusky has one tape to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know they can score points. Yes. And they scored 70, and they scored on the last play of the game, I was told, against Pike Valley to win the game last week, 70-68. And
yep.
Lakeside, of course, they won their game 70-56. So, yeah, it could be a lot of points in that one in Downs later on this evening. And our coverage starts with the Express, brought to you by Cunningham Telephone Cable at 540, pregame at 630, Thunder Ridge, Rock Hills on KD Country 94. Beloit Southeast Lean on Z96.3 Lake. And our coverage concludes with the State Farm Insurance Local High School Scoreboard Show, brought to you by State Farm Insurance, Kevin Hewitt in Beloit, and also Marty Walters over in Osborne. Anything else you want to say about football for tonight?
I think we got it covered.
Scoreboard show could be a little interesting.
Yeah, I'm planning on doing that on the road. Maybe if I get lucky, I'll get back in time to maybe get one coach on tonight, but I'm not predicting it right now because I do think that game's going four quarters in Kensington.
I would concur with that. Absolutely would. So high school football week two tonight. Hope you enjoy the coverage as always on our radio stations and a live video stream for Beloit as well. All right. So before we get into the Chiefs, I just want to touch upon this. Last night I attended the Ken Piazza Celebration of Life there at Down Under. I got there at 5:30. There was tons of cars. And I figured I might be there 30, 45 minutes and then head out. And had such a good time talking with people and everything else. I left after the Chiefs game started.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun talking with people. I got to talk with Clayton Williams for a while. I got to talk with Dallas Cox for a while, who played on those teams back in the mid-70s. The people I was talking to talked more football than we did wrestling.
Yeah.
But there was tons of former players and athletes of Ken Piazza and students that were there. There were many that made the trip all the way up to New Prague, Minnesota for the funeral service of Ken Piazza, who passed away at the age of 77. And I had a story that somebody told me that there was this one kid that didn't really play very much, so forth and so on, but Ken Piazza affected and impacted his life so much that he wanted to be at the funeral, went all the way up there. That shows you the impact of a coach on somebody. It doesn't have to be just all the starters or all the stars or the athletic kids or whatever else. And so I heard some really interesting stories. Kimmer was there. Kimmer always has his stories, of course, about when it was negative 78 degrees when Beloit played Cherryvale in football, which it was really cold that day, but not quite maybe that much. But so it was good to see Kimmer and many other people. Got me a few others. Got to meet Ken Piazza's wife, Jean. Very nice lady. Had nothing but good things to say about us and our coverage. And that was pretty cool, and got to meet one of the boys. I think it was Nick. So really good night. It was really cool. Everybody had a good time. There's plenty of food, that's for sure. And so I was just honored to be invited and included in that celebration of life with Ken Piazza. And so it was a really fun evening there at the Down Under. And for everybody that put that together, and for everybody that showed up to honor him, well done. Well done. Something that wasn't well done last night was the Kansas City Chiefs, and Listen, there's all kinds of ways we can go and approach this. As a fan watching the game last night, I didn't think the Chiefs were going to lose, and they shouldn't have. And then I'm laying in bed, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. I mean, the Chiefs did so many things wrong, and the Lions still only beat them by 1 point. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Chiefs should have won that game. And, you know, I've said this for a long time, that the Chiefs people talk about who's the big obstacle for the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. And people talk, well, the Bills some years, the Bengals some years, the Ravens some years. And I've always answered with, it's the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs are their biggest opponent. The Chiefs' toughest opponent is themselves. And that rang true in spades last night. The Chiefs lose the opener to the Lions 21-20 at Arrowhead. The Lions, with a fake punt from their own 17 on a 4th-and-3, go on a 14-play, 91-yard drive, led 7-0. They're the underdog. They have nothing to lose. But then later in the game, when it's 4th-and-3, I think at the Chiefs 45, they punted. Made no sense to me. Like, mm-hmm. This is what coaches and teams do every year. I get on my soapbox and talk about it every year. These guys get paid millions of dollars, these coaches, to be brilliant, and then they become brain dead. I don't understand it. Like, if you are you going to be all in or not? You're playing the Chiefs. You're all in early, but then all of a sudden you just forget who you're playing midway through the game or later in the game, and you go back to Mr. Conservative. That's not how you should do it. You should be going for every 4th-and-2, 4th-and-3, anywhere from your own 40 to the other end of the field. You shouldn't settle for field goals either, although I understand settling for one here or there. But you should never punt the football anywhere close to midfield against Kansas City Chiefs. That's just stupid. And so why would you go for a 4th-and-3 at your own 17 on a fake punt and then not go for a 4th-and-3 at the Chiefs 46 or whatever it was last night? And they punted. I'm like, hallelujah. I'm like, thank you, thank you, thank you. There is not a single coach I've seen yet that's actually been all in. I've used the analogy 1,000 times. I'll use it again. A lot of these coaches, they dip their toes into the deep end. And they'll be, ooh, what a gutsy call this guy made. And then later in the game, the same coaching staff, they have a chance to jump into the deep end, come up, survive, get ready, could jump off the diving board again, and they refuse to jump in because they're scared. And I don't get it. You're not scared early in the game. All of a sudden in the third quarter, you're deciding to punt. It's like, did you forget who you were playing? I don't get it. Be all in. If you're going to beat the Chiefs, go for it a majority of the time. Anytime fourth and five or shorter, you should go against the Chiefs. Because as Chris Collinsworth said, what's the difference between, you know, giving the Chiefs the ball at the 40 or the 15? Usually. Well, now, last night, nobody can catch the ball, so it really doesn't matter, mm-hmm. does it? So the Chiefs came back, touchdown passes, Mahomes, Rashee Rice, and Blake Bell at 14-7. No Travis Kelce last night, no Chris Jones, so forth and so on. And really, the biggest play in the game to me was the Chiefs had things under control. They were up 14-7. Patrick Mahomes couldn't have handed the ball any better than Kadarius Toney. I mean, you see the still shot, it is literally in his hands. And Toney, you know what? He's human. He made a mistake. He dropped the ball. It happens, okay? It was a nice one-handed interception. It goes the other way for a pick six. That should not count against Patrick Mahomes at all. Shouldn't count even against your players in fantasy football, by the way, but it did. It cost you 6 points, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
That was a great pass. It was on the money, and it's just a bad play by Toney, okay? That drop was very important, but honestly, another drop he had was even way more important that people are overlooking slightly, okay? Everybody's caught up in the pick six. Like, well, if you don't have the pick six, If Kadarius Toney just bats down every ball that comes at him last night, the Chiefs win, which is probably true. If you don't have the pick six, the Chiefs win. Yes, I agree. You can say that in about any football game. You know, if you don't have the pick six, you have a better chance of winning. That's obvious. But the biggest play of the game, the Lions go up 21-20. The Chiefs have a 3rd-and-1. We'll get into the short yardage shenanigans, as I call it. They had a couple penalties on the final drive, a hold on Smith, false start on Taylor because he finally was called for one, so forth and so on. And the Chiefs on a 4th-and-25, Sky Moore drops it. I mean, that was a heck of a throw by Mahomes, and they still dropped that. That was an amazing play by Mahomes. We should have added to his lore. But to me, the biggest play of the game last night, Kadarius Toney is wide open. The Chiefs had the ball with 2 minutes to go. They get a stop on 4th down. They got the ball. And Mahomes throws, Tony's wide open, he catches that ball, the Chiefs are already in Butker's field goal range. All he needs is 3 points. The Chiefs can milk down the clock and get a chip shot field goal, more than likely. And Tony tries to catch it. Why? With his chest, his elbow. I don't know what he's trying to. I mean, it was horrible. Bad mechanics. Do you know he has the highest percentage drop rate of any NFL player in the last since he's been in the league? And he's supposed to be your number one wideout. Now, in fairness to Tony, he didn't have preseason. He'd been hurt, so forth and so on. I don't want to see Kadarius Tony on Twitter at all until the next game. Stay off of it. Stay focused. Do what you need to do. And maybe Tony shouldn't have been on the field. Maybe you got to put that on the Chiefs. Maybe he shouldn't have been on the field. But you were without Kelce, so you probably felt you needed to have Tony out on the field. The Chiefs had four drops. It felt like 20. Mahomes, 21 of 39 for 226. His line should have been better than that. Sky Moore didn't have a catch last night. Sky Moore and Kadarius Tony combined to be targeted 8 times in the game. They had one catch for 1 yard. And one that went directly for an interception the other way that tied the game at 14 and changed everything. In the second half, when Mahomes targeted his wide receivers, he was 2 of 12 with no touchdowns and INT. So the pick six changed the game. The bigger play to me was the drop where the Chiefs would have had the field goal and the pick six wouldn't have mattered. Let's hear from Andy Reid on the dropsies.
No excuses at all. We've got guys that can play. We're right there to take care of business. You know, they got us on special teams and continue the drive. They got us on the tip ball. So, I mean, listen, it's unusual for the guys that drop the ball to drop the ball. That's not what I've seen from them, and I wouldn't expect them to do that. So you do that, you take care of business there, and you'd be all right.
Yeah, it's easy to clean up. Just catch the ball. I mean, the Chiefs can fix these problems very easily. Here's Mahomes on Kadarius Toney.
I have trust in KT. He missed a lot of training camp. Obviously, he wanted to play and fought rehab hard so he could play. And stuff's not always going to go your way. Obviously, he would have wanted to catch a few of those in the game, but I have trust that he's going to be that guy that I go to in those crucial moments, and he's going to make the catch and win us some seasons like he did last year. So we're going to continue to work him in, get him more and more reps, and I'm sure that those drops will kind of disappear.
Well, I would hope so. He's supposed to be your number one wide receiver, and the early returns aren't very good. Of course, people want to freak out. You know, this game's on Veach because he didn't get our receivers that we needed. It's like it's one game. This game is on Reed because of his play calling, or Matt Nagy, who's a new offensive coordinator. I agree with that, actually. We'll talk about that in a moment. So, Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney do nothing last night. I mean, Toney did something in a negative way. Sky Moore did nothing. MBS wasn't really part of it. He had one long catch before halftime. He just kind of is there and catches a couple balls a game. He's not a number one guy.
No, not a number one.
And he's not even really number two. Your number one guy is Kelce, and he was hurt. He didn't play last night. Your number two guy, you hope, is Tony. Maybe eventually it will be Sky Moore. Maybe it'll be Rashee Rice. I don't know. Rice had a drop too last night, but he is a rookie. I get it. The only wide receiver that played well last night was Justin Watson, and that's the one everybody wanted to cut. Richie James really wasn't part of the offense. So there's so many ways I could go here, but let me start with this. You go in. I don't want to make excuses for Andy Reid and the coaching staff, but let's point this out. Kelce didn't hurt himself till Tuesday. You have the game plan in. You have everything going. You're not going hard in practice. You don't expect a guy to get hurt. There's a non-contact thing from what I understand. Just hyperextended his knee. And that changes your game plan. And you can stay up 48 hours straight. It still affects your game plan. And then you're bringing back a receiver that hasn't done anything in preseason because he's had knee surgery, and Kadarius Toney. So now what you're trying to do is you're trying to incorporate Rashee Rice, a rookie. Justin Ross is a rookie. You're trying to incorporate Kadarius Toney, who hasn't played at all preseason, who's maybe not even 100% right now. And then all of a sudden, Kelce is out of the picture. So I don't think there's any doubt that threw the Chiefs for a loop. The Chiefs wanted to go about their business as running their offense like normal. And we know what the Chiefs' offense is. They're not a run-first team. All right, the pass sets up the run a little bit. They'll run some screens. Although where was the screen game last night? Aiden Hutchinson's all over at times in the backfield when he was over the guard Trey Smith. The Chiefs ran one screen to Pacheco. Like, where is the screen game? Mm-hmm. Like, if you really want to get Tony some confidence, instead of handing it to him on a second and one going wide, how about a bubble screen to Tony? There was no bubble screen last night. There was that's the way to build confidence with a receiver. There was no screen game last night except for one play. And I honestly think Andy Reid and Matt Nagy were out of sync play calling last night. And like I said, they're paid the big bucks to get these things right. I know some people will say, well, you know, Matt Nagy versus Eric Bieniemy. Matt Nagy, well, he wasn't a great play caller at Chicago. Well, he did a good job when he was offensive coordinator of the Chiefs. Alex Smith, you know, he did good things there. Matt Nagy's a pretty good offensive mind. I think the Chiefs will be fine. But that's something that not many people talked about was, what about getting in sync with Matt Nagy and Mahomes being on the same page and Andy Reid? That's three different people. You got to be on the same page to call this play or that play. And then before your first game with Matt Nagy's offensive coordinator, Bieniemy is in Washington the Tuesday of a Thursday night game, so 2 days before the game, your star tight end, your number one wideout, who is going to be your number one focus in the passing game, hyperextends his knee, and he's out. It does cause you to scramble. It does. It kind of negates having all this time to prepare for a team that I kind of overlooked and didn't mention yesterday in the show because I thought, you know, you got plenty of time prepared for the Lions, blah, blah, blah. But Kelce getting hurt a couple days before the game obviously changed some things. So when I thought, I didn't think Kelce was going to play last night. I'm glad he didn't play last night. There's no need to risk it. And I'm not freaking out that the Chiefs lost the game. But if you are short your number one receiver and your number one wide receiver, supposedly Tony, who hasn't played all preseason, you're going up against Aiden Hutchinson, who's a very good pass rusher. The Lions defense isn't all that, although it is improved, I think. And it goes back, once again, I'm going to say this 1,000 times so I'm sick and blue in the face, and you can put this on the side of my tombstone as well. And that is, and I know it's just a waste of time, but I'll throw it out there. Establish the run. Pacheco carried the ball, what, 6 times last night, I think it was? 8? I mean, Hilaire carried it 5 times. There was no, you know, who the
Patrick
leading
Mahomes should not be the leading rusher.
He was 6 for 46. I mean, I don't understand. Like Andy Reid, sometimes it's just like, I don't care who I have on the field. I'm just going to stick to what I do. And it's like, dude, if you could run the ball a little bit. But anywho, they don't even try to establish it, in my opinion. The short yardage woes are just infuriating and makes you pull all the hair out of your head. As you said yesterday on Twitter, and we've talked about this before, Andy Reid is a genius, but he can't get 1 yard. The Chiefs, I've said this for 5 years since Mahomes really started, the Chiefs are better in 3rd and 12, 3rd and 17 last night than 3rd and 1 or 4th and 1 or 4th and 2. And every time the Chiefs are a yard shy of the sticks, even on 2nd and 1, I'm going crap. That's exactly what I say.
They helped him out last night by taking that penalty to not have him 3rd and 2, and it was 2nd down and 22, right?
Right.
Like, should have taken the penalty and made it 3rd and 2 or whatever.
They should have declined the penalty, is what I meant. Because it was a half the distance. Yeah. So I didn't understand. And the announcers didn't talk about that one. That was a mistake by Andy Reid. You have one play to get off.
I'm talking about the penalty the Lions declined that gave the Chiefs 2nd and 22 instead of 3rd and 2.
No, that was the one where they were going to have, it was 3rd and 7, I forgot what it was, but they end up, whatever the case may be, the Chiefs had a chance. It was half the distance to the goal.
Yeah, for the Lions.
And it
would
have been third and long, and they decided to take the half the distance. Now, the 15 yards, I'm all for taking it. It was 2nd and 22, and they picked it up, a good chunk of it right away. They had 2 downs to get 22. You could have had them have 1 down getting, I think, like 9 or 10. And Andy accepted a penalty. I'm like, see, this is where coaches get things messed up. They need to adjust to the game. It's not as hard for offenses to get those yards anymore. So don't give them multiple chances. You give them one chance. You know, you 4th down and 2, the Chiefs are horrible at short yardage situation, and Dan Campbell, this is the one you're talking about, he ends up accepting the penalty to make it 3rd and 17 when he should have actually went ahead and been 4th and 2. He should have declined the penalty, but he took the penalty, and so the Chiefs have 3rd and 17, and they convert on the play, and they go down and they score a touchdown. That you got to know who you're playing. I mean, the Chiefs are better in 3rd and long than they are in short situations. But here's the thing that drives me insane. It drives me insane. And last night, by the way, the Chiefs had 2nd and 2 at the 17, 2nd and 1 at the 20. They're in the red zone both times. 2nd and 2 at the 17, 2nd and 1 at the 20, and they got field goals. And they've got the best quarterback in the world. They got the best so-called head coach and genius offensively. And you, how do you not get those yards? Okay, so the play calling, we've talked about this before, too, and it's easy. It's easy, right? It's easy to complain about play calling. Everybody can do it, all right? When it works, they're a genius. When it doesn't, you're an idiot. But here's the thing that I have never understood, and this is where I think these geniuses outthink themselves. They just sometimes geniuses are so brilliant that they're their own problem. Sometimes geniuses overthink things so much they forget there's even a thing called the keep it simple, stupid principle. It's keep it simple, stupid. KISS is the principle. So can you explain to me this? Last night, all right, fourth down and 25, just north of 2 minutes left, three timeouts, they go for it. And that's fine. I didn't have a problem with that. There are some people complain and punt the ball. No. You got Mahomes. And even if you turn it over on downs, even if you let the Lions score a touchdown, you're still down eight. So no, you don't punt it. Sorry, Jay on social media who's talking about this. Well, I think the odds are better that. Have you watched Mahomes play in his career? I mean, I'm amazed at how dumb some Chiefs fans can be. I'm not trying to be too mean, but it's just that's the only thing I can say. Like, have you not watched Chiefs football all these years, in the last 5 years, understand that Mahomes, down in distance, I mean, for crying out loud, he got in the field goal range with 30 seconds to go to force overtime against the Patriots his first year in an AFC title game. He did it in 13 seconds to tie the Bills. You think fourth and 25 is insurmountable? No, it's not. And by the way, if Sky Moore catches the frickin' ball... Mahomes did convert a fourth and 25 last night. He can't catch it, too. So that was the right call to go for it, fourth and 25, because if you don't get it, the Lions, I mean, what the Chiefs should have done is let them score. That's what they should have done. But they didn't. But here's the thing I don't get. So you want to keep the ball in Mahomes' hands on fourth and 25 instead of punting. But when you have fourth down and two, you take the ball out of his hands to kick a field goal. You have fourth down and three. You take the ball out of Mahomes' hands and you kick a field goal. You have fourth down and four twice in good field position and you punt both times and you take the ball out of Mahomes' hands. That's four different drives you take the ball out of his hands. Fourth and 25, you don't want to take the ball out of his hands. That makes no sense to me. But I'll go one step further. Forget fourth down. Because you shouldn't even be in fourth down. When you have second down and one, and you run a wide receiver sweep, jet sweep with Kadarius Toney after you just got 9 yards, I believe on a run, and then later you have a third and one, and not only do you take the ball out of the hands of Mahomes, you give it to Blake Bell to get under center, and then you run it in the round with Rashee Rice. Now, I don't know what school people went to, but I was taught back in, I don't know, second grade, that the quickest point between point A and B, the quickest way to get there, is in a straight line. So if the first down, you're going north and south, why the hell are you running east and west? Like... And it goes back to, we don't want to run a quarterback sneak. Absolutely. This is what it goes down to. 100%. This is the big, you know how the Chiefs can solve their short yardage situations? It's finally get past the fear that Mahomes is going to break his leg in half on running a quarterback sneak. That's the easiest way to solve it. That's the easiest way to solve it. And by the way, why Creed Humphrey didn't snap it when the guy came across is beyond me as well.
Yeah, it should have been.
That was a mistake by Creed Humphrey.
Shouldn't even have to worry about
right. But so now we don't even Blake Bell we know can't even get a half a yard on a sneak, so now we hand it to Rashee Rice, a rookie, and a little end around action, a little jet sweep kind of action, and both plays you're going parallel line of scrimmage, and then you eventually got to turn it upfield, and it's just mind boggling to me. They don't have a fullback this year, so now you don't have the Mike Burton play that actually helped them in short yardage at times last year. Can you help explain to me why? If Mahomes is really good in third and long, and you think he can get 25 yards on fourth down and keep the ball in his hands because you think that's better than punting the ball, why in the hell don't you let Mahomes throw the ball on third and one? Because you know what's probably going to happen? If nothing's open, he's going to scramble and get it. Because he was your best running back last night anyway. Why do the Chiefs do this all the time? They outthink themselves in short yardage situations. They get cute. They get silly. Sometimes it works. Listen, as this person said, I would simply not run the plays where Blake Bell's in place of Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. Those plays need to just hit the toilet so fast and be flushed. Blake Bell should not be under center. Blake Bell should not be under center for any play from here on out. And I don't even care if he gets the next three quarterback sneaks. Patrick Mahomes, you keep the ball in his hands. When you're running gadget plays like this, it means you have no confidence that you can get a yard. It means you have no confidence in your running game. So if you have no confidence in your running game and your offense is based on throwing the football, then why the hell not let Mahomes throw the ball? And we know there's safe routes on third and one. We see it all the time.
Well, sure,
Look at the playoff game against the Browns and Chad Henne to Tyreek Hill. Mahomes did a Tyreek Hill in another game where it clinched a game. And I know they don't have Tyreek Hill anymore, and I know they didn't have Kelsey last night. But, I mean, if you have no faith you can get it going straight ahead, getting half a yard, and you won't quarterback sneak it with Patrick Mahomes, then why are you not throwing the ball on third and one? You've got the best quarterback in the league, the best arm in the league, and you don't even need 25 yards. You need one. It blows my mind. This is the Chiefs overthinking things. Why would you take the ball out of 15's hands any more than you have to is beyond me. Is beyond me. Can you help?
There's only one reason I say I don't 100% agree with Blake Bell should never take another snap under center. The reason I say that is because if you actually line him up under center and run the damn play, run the play, right? Like, don't sit. He does not have to come in motion from his tight end
just
spot.
Just go up there.
And then line up under center. Line his ass right behind Creed Humphrey and push forward with your big body.
And by the way, he did this so many times in college. And why do they take forever to snap it because they're doing motion all this crap. Just go under center, go.
Right,
quick count. There.
Exactly. That's why I say I don't 100% agree with it. If they would do it the right way, Blake Bell's the guy you want to do that when you need the yard if you're not going to use Patrick Mahomes on a quarterback sneak.
Right.
If you're not going to use him
and you decide you don't want to pass.
Blake Bell up under Creed Humphrey, let Joe Tooney, Trey Smith, let that whole offensive line push that defensive line back and get your damn yard. It's not that hard to figure
out. Why can't you put another offensive lineman in the game right behind and have Derek Nnadi and just shove him from behind and be lined up at fullback?
Yeah.
It's legal. You can do it. Look at the Eagles.
It's just like you see all these other teams that are doing it, and the Eagles are the perfect example. Like, if they're in fourth and one, you know Jalen Hurts is running a quarterback sneak.
And you still can't stop
every single time. You know that's what's coming. So just set this thing up to where if you don't want Patrick Mahomes to take the snap, fine. Blake Bell's done this plenty of times in his life. Get his butt under center and go forward.
Yes.
Get up to the line, take the snap, go forward, get your yard, and move on. If you're not going to do it like that, what are you running gadget on third and one with a tight end that's done this before? They did it last year with him just under center. They didn't even run the motion last year. Like, they've figured this out. He's done it before. Like, or if you want it to be Travis Kelce, I don't care who it is. I don't want it to be Travis Kelce. Why are you worried about Patrick Mahomes getting hurt on a quarterback sneak and not Travis Kelce? So, it just baffles me that they need to make it more difficult than it actually is. Had they not run that stupid motion get Blake Bell under center play in preseason, they would have run, I think, the stupid motion get Blake Bell under center and let him go forward instead of trying to run an end around. But it didn't work the one time he ran it in the preseason because he's got motion. You tell him to line up under center and go which way he's supposed to go, he'll probably just do it, right?
Yeah.
Now you're running under in motion, trying to get under center, trying to figure out where everybody's at all at the same time, and that's why it takes a while to get the snap off because you need to know where everybody's set, and then it just disrupts everything. Listen, I 100% agree with don't take the ball out of 15's hands more than you need to.
Especially if you're going to run a gadget play.
You can make this play so much easier.
No, I agree with you. If you're going to make it a gadget play, then let Mahomes hand it off. Don't have Blake Bell handing that off. But they're thinking, well, they don't. But see, that goes back to they know you're not going to run the quarterback sneak. So if Mahomes is under center, they know Mahomes ain't going to run it.
Yes.
Yeah. And by the way, Max said, hey, you know, it's just one game. You know, I'm not freaking out at all about the game.
No.
I'm not freaking out about the loss. What I'm sitting here is I am so tired of the same old crap where the Chiefs can march it right down the field and they can get third and 17. They can get second and 12. They can get fourth and 8. And they should have had fourth and 25, but they can't. On two downs, they can't get 1 yard, and if they went for it on fourth and short, which they don't do sometimes, and they should, they still don't. There's times they don't get it then either. It's like, how do you not get a yard in two or three downs in this league? And you've got the supposedly best offense in football.
Yeah.
So here's Andy Reid on the short yardage situations. You're going to hear what you expect to hear.
Yeah, we got to do a better job there. So
you think?
I got to take care of that. I mean, we work like crazy on our short yardage, and for it to happen like that is not good. We weren't very good last year at it, and we spent a lot of time working on that. So we've got to keep going here and make sure we take care of it. I'll take that. That's my responsibility to get that taken care of.
Here's Mahomes on the short yardage issues.
We work on it. Every year. We've obviously emphasized it this last year. After last year, not converting at the rate that we wanted to, but obviously we got to keep working on it because we didn't convert in those situations today.
Listen, they have to be better in that area. And I'll go back to Andy Reid not adjusting. And listen, he's a great coach. I mean, he's won Super Bowls. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. That doesn't mean he's perfect. Okay, but this is Andy Reid, and this is, I think, a lot of the older coaches don't catch on. And honestly, some of the younger guys don't either. What is the strength of your football team?
Patrick Mahomes.
Thank you. Why are you on 4th and 2, 4th and 3, 4th and 4 twice? They had 4 occasions where they should have gone for it all 4 times.
Well, you're talking about the Lions should go for it all the time. If the Chiefs are 4th and 5 or shorter, I think they should go for it every time.
I agree.
The odds, the old odds might not be great, but the odds are very, very much higher with 15 at quarterback.
Definitely if you're 4th and 2 or short. Although the Chiefs are horrible in the short yardage, so maybe you could say, well, wait a minute, you're contradicting yourself. That's when the Chiefs should punt or field goal because they can't get 2 yards on 4th down. You might be right. By the way, this is going back to the comment I made about some fans aren't just very smart. If you watched that game last night and you're sitting here today saying you got to pay Chris Jones, we have to have him now. No, you must have watched a whole different game. I don't know what other channel you were on. Nickelodeon, watching a different version of the broadcast? The Kansas City Chiefs defense last night is not the reason they lost. And Chris Jones playing last night, I don't know, means they win. Listen, they had some dumb debate. Well, who's more important, Kelce or Jones? And as I said, this is one of the dumbest questions ever if you actually know anything about Chiefs football. Kelce's way more important than Chris Jones. And
Kelce's probably catching those passes that were dropped.
I guarantee he is. Offense is different with Kelce out there. And I know the defense is different with Chris Jones. But the Chiefs, a lot of times with Chris Jones, don't get a pass rush and still have to blitz. There are people saying, well, if we get Chris Jones back, we won't have to blitzes. No, have you watched the Chiefs with Chris Jones?
What the Chiefs do?
They blitz because they can't get pressure with the front four. That's even Frank Clark and Chris Jones sometimes they wouldn't be able to do that. Chris Jones, I think if you learned anything from last night, it's the opposite of what some people are saying. I mean, really, if you really watched that game last night, you have young players, a lot of those positions. Felix Nduke Ozama got a pressure or two. Okay, he gets more caught up to speed. That's a good sign. Karloftis, a couple times, could almost picked off a pass, got some pressure off the edge. Mike Dana had a little bit of pressure. Now, they only had one sack, and I'm not saying they had a great pass rush. But listen, when your defense holds the other team to 14 points, and you're sitting there going, well, Detroit scored 21. Not on the defense. Kadarius Toney scored 7 for the Lions because he couldn't catch a pass right in his hands. The defense allowed 14 points. That's it. They gave, and by the way, the first drive, they got the job done, and the special teams kept that drive alive. Okay? That wasn't the defense. So the defense held the Lions to 14 points. Let me set something up for you. The Lions were the 4th best offense last year, the 4th best offense in the entire league. The Chiefs defense held them to 1 drive, 1 touchdown in the first half. They forced a big turnover that saved points, and they only gave up 1 touchdown in the second half. That was it. With this offense, with Andy Reid's genius creativity on offense, with Patrick Mahomes and his brilliance, and even without Travis Kelce, the Chiefs should score more. They should be able to win. They should automatically win a game when their defense holds the other team to 14. Yeah. Automatically. So the defense did its job. Don't sit here and tell me, well, we needed more pass rush and more sacks. Well, of course, that would have helped. If the Chiefs shut them out, the Chiefs would have won. Duh. But in this league, it's hard to shut anybody out. To play against a high-powered offense that they did last night and hold the Lions, the 14 points of offense, this is not a Chris Jones problem in regards to last night. We might see the Chiefs next Sunday play the Jaguars and get lit up like a Christmas tree and give up 40, and then we're going to be sitting here on the following Monday going, pay the man. But this is not the reaction you should have today, is pay the man. That wasn't the reason Chiefs lost last night, is because Chris Jones wasn't playing. The reason Chiefs lost last night is very simple. Receivers dropped passes. Chiefs settled for field goals. Chiefs had bad play calling and horrible execution in short yardage situations. That's why they lost. Oh, yeah, even without Kelce, they should have won the game. The Lions didn't play great, in my opinion. Their defense was decent, but it helps the team, you know, drops passes left and right. But the Kansas City Chiefs last night beat themselves. The Chiefs were so bad in so many ways last night in self-inflicting wounds on offense that they still lost by 1 point. It's not like the Chiefs played great and lost by one. They didn't play well at all. I thought they beat themselves last night. Give the Lions credit. Their defense made some plays. I'll give them that. Their offense wasn't that great. Give the Chiefs defense for that. But the Kansas City Chiefs defense was not the problem last night. That's not the reason they lost. The reason they lost is the receivers were bad, except for Justin Watson, and the play calling short yardage was not good, and it was bad execution there, and not going for it in certain situations and settling for three. Like, when you're up 3-17-14, have a fourth down and two or three, what does going up six versus being up three in the fourth quarter really help you? I mean, to me, it doesn't gain you much, especially if it's fourth and short. Go ahead and go for it. Realize what you have. But anyway, I digress. Here's Mahomes on losing the opener last night.
It's embarrassing for me to lose any time. Like I had said after the ring ceremony, I'd moved on to the next season. Obviously, it's cool for the fans to be able to see the banner and drop it at Arrowhead Stadium. But this is a whole new year, and I think I know that. And we're trying to win another Super Bowl, and this is obviously not the way we wanted to start. And so anytime I lose, I'm embarrassed. And so I'm going to try to get better so I don't lose more as the season goes on.
Let me translate that for you. Mahomes saying, I don't care about last year anymore. I don't care about last year anymore. That was last year. We're done. And I think there might be a few players on this team, younger players, that maybe don't quite understand that. Here's Mahomes on refocusing.
It'll be good for the young guys to know that we're not going to just kind of walk in and win the game. You're going to have to play. You have to play good football. We're going to play every team's best shot. I've preached it to them all preseason, but they know now. And we're going to go to Jacksonville next week, and that's going to be a good football team. So hopefully guys learn from it, get better, and this one loss doesn't turn into two.
Okay, so listen. We're getting fired up about the short yardage situation because we've been watching this for quite some time. That's why Dusty and I are getting energetic and fired up. We're not getting fired up and energetic and ticked off because the Chiefs lost the game, per se. It's because we see the same song and dance when it comes to those short yardage situations. It's becoming a running joke that the Chiefs don't want to be in second and one or third and one. That's why Dan Campbell should have declined the penalty and put him fourth and two and said third and 17, when conventional thinking is, yeah, of course you back him up and make it third and 17. The Chiefs defy conventional thinking and they defy conventional play calling in short yardage situations as well. But listen, like Max said in the text, it is just one game. And it is. It's just one game. I said this a few weeks ago. I don't care if the Chiefs lose to the Lions on Thursday night. I mean, I care, but I'm not worried about big picture. If the Chiefs lose to the Lions, I'm not worried about it because that means the Lions, you know, improved. They're a good team. It's not an AFC team. You're not going to cost you in a tiebreaker head-to-head. And there's plenty of time to recover from 0-1, okay? There's 16 more games. If the Chiefs win the next 16 games, is anybody going to care about this game? No. If the Chiefs make the playoffs, anybody going to care about this game? No, especially if they have home field advantage. It means it didn't cost them anything. Now, if the Chiefs end up being a 2 seed and they have one more loss than, say, the Bills or the Bengals, and they go on the road an AFC title game, then yes, the loss to the Lions, you could argue, or any loss, cost you a chance to be home field, right? But there's no need to freak out, okay? All of these things are very correctable. The drops are the easiest thing to correct, all right? Kelce coming back, hopefully, for Jacksonville obviously helps take pressure off of these young receivers. Sky Moore was very disappointing last night. Like I said, Kadarius Toney, he's going to take all the bullets and be made fun of. But Sky Moore, the only reason Sky Moore wasn't as bad as Toney is because he didn't have as many opportunities to mess up.
Yeah.
I mean, Sky Moore is very disappointing. The thing I take out of this game, I was the most disappointed in was Sky Moore. Not Kadarius Toney, because he hadn't even practiced all preseason. Moore's been playing and practicing, playing in preseason games. I thought he was going to take a huge step up. Last night did not look like that was the case. Now, maybe he will starting next week, or maybe it'll be week 7. If you're thinking Justin Ross is still learning the system. Justin Ross is a rookie. Rashee Rice, you can't expect those two guys to do huge things right off the bat. I mean, Sky Moore didn't do anything in the offense until late in the season last year as a rookie. So who do you got to depend on or rely on? That's 87, Kelce, and he wasn't on the field last night, and it showed. But don't freak out. Chiefs fans, would you please calm down? I know. I was just riled up. Dusty was just riled up. But I mean in regards to the big picture.
No, I was like last night when I came out here to do the sportscast, I'm like, Chiefs lost.
Yeah.
I was like, what? It's week one. I'm not going to panic about it. Like,
listen,
there were some things that didn't go your way. There's some people that weren't playing in the game. And it's right. Like, I can't sit here. They're like, there's people that wanted to talk to me still after, like,
right.
2 hours after the game. I'm like, I'm not going to dwell on week one loss. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, I'm going to move on. We're going to know that there's things to fix, obviously.
Here's the thing. I didn't think the Lions played that great last night. I think that's the thing that I'm a little bit disappointed in. Like, I've been thinking the Chiefs are going to play better than they did last night. And if the Lions beat the Chiefs, that just means the Lions, you know, played better. And they're improving. They're ascending team. And I thought maybe it's 34-31 and the Chiefs lose, you know. No Chris Jones. The Lions have a good offense. You lose a shootout. Hey, you know, it's not the end of the world. You get Chris Jones signed and you get this and this and you're going to be better. And yet I'm sitting here going, even with a pick six, the Lions only scored 21 points. The Chiefs should win every one of those games. And at home, and the Chiefs had all the opportunities in the world to win that game last night, and they keep gagging it away. So the reason I'm so bothered by the loss last night is not the big picture. It's that they had so many mistakes, and I'm surprised at all those mistakes, I guess. But don't freak out. In 2019, the Chiefs started 6-4, and they won the Super Bowl. In 2021, the Chiefs started out 3-4. I remember we talked in the show. I thought they'd be fine. I was the one that was calm and reasonable at the time.
Mahomes was broken.
And Ryan Clark and all these people said Mahomes was broken. I kept telling people they're going to be fine. And I said, I still think they're going to win. I think I predicted at that time they're still going to win 12 games or 11 games, and they end up winning 12, I think. Mm-hmm. And they started 3-4, and they lost in overtime in an AFC title game, which should have never happened. Mahomes went, I don't know what happened second half of that game, but they were dominating the first half. So the Chiefs started 3-4, and they made the AFC title game. Last year, the Chiefs lost to a really bad Colts game. That was a game the Chiefs threw away as well. Of course, they had a backup kicker. That didn't help. But they had a Chris Jones dumb penalty that kept the drive alive. And the Chiefs shot themselves in the foot in that game in Indianapolis. They had no business losing that game to the Colts. Now, Lions are a better team than last year's Colts team. Don't get me wrong. But the Chiefs, what happened at the end of the year? Oh, yeah, they won the Super Bowl. So, big deal. The Patriots 1 year started the year, I believe it was against the Bills, and with Tom Brady, yes, the GOAT, Tom Brady at quarterback, and the Patriots lost. It was either week one or week two. They lost 40-0, I think it was, or 40-7. It was horrible. Patriots won the Super Bowl that year.
Yeah.
The year the Chiefs kicked the crap out of the Patriots on a Monday night with Alex Smith, the quarterback, in Kansas City. And people actually had the audacity to ask Bill Belichick after the game about, you know, should he bench Tom Brady? Is there a quarterback controversy? And Belichick just rolled his eyes like, how dumb can you be? The Patriots won the Super Bowl. So there's your ebbs and flows, your ups and downs. It's just one game. They're going to have extra time now to prepare for Jacksonville. They got 10 days to get ready. Hopefully Kelsey's healthy. Maybe Chris Jones is signing a new contract as we speak. I don't know. By the way, very awkward that Chris Jones... I still think it's so... I mean, I think it's great that he was there. He's part of the Super Bowl thing. He's up in the suite, but he's wearing no Chiefs gear, which was kind of weird, interesting. Like, he acts like he's a free agent. He's not. He's under contract. Can you imagine going to your employer and just saying, hey, I'm going to show up at work, but I'm not going to actually work and clock in. I'm just going to sit here and watch you all. That was awkward and weird.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs are okay with it, so why should I care, I guess. But there is no need to freak out. As I said a few weeks ago, the Chiefs lose to the Lions... As long as they win the next game against Jacksonville, that's the more important of the two. Now, if they start 0-2 and Chris Jones still isn't signed, they're going to be Chiefs fans that literally might just not make it to the Monday after week two. They may jump off the cliff. I say literally and figuratively. There are fans, and every fan base has them, but they're just actually going to go into absolute delirious mode and panic mode if the Chiefs start 0-2, lose to the Jaguars, and all the national talking heads who say the Chiefs are dead, the Chiefs are done, Chris Jones, it's a distraction, the Chiefs are getting older, which they're not, except Kelsey is, but everybody else, they're pretty young, and people are going to freak out like you've never seen before if they lose the next game.
Yeah.
And by the way, their teams have started 0-2 and have made it to the Super Bowl and won. See the Dallas Cowboys, who had a holdout that year in Emmitt Smith. Once he came back, everything was glorious, and the Cowboys won and put it all together. So there's plenty of time. Andy Reid's a smart dude. All right. He knows more football than all of us listeners that you're listening to the show right now, me and Dusty combined. He is a genius. Sometimes geniuses have bad nights. I thought it was a poor night last night in regards to the play calling, but in fairness, no Kelsey, And they didn't really know this until Tuesday when he got hurt, so they didn't have a lot of time to adjust the game plan. You have a new offensive coordinator. A lot of people think that's no big deal, but I think there was a bit of a transition that you're going to go through with Nagy instead of Bieniemy being in the headset. Different mind here. You got Mahomes, Nagy, and Reed. Last year it was basically Reed, Nagy, Bieniemy, and Mahomes. Maybe one less guy in the headset. You could say that's a good thing. Well, it might be one less mind to come up with a good play, too. So I'm not freaking out at all, but I am discouraged and very disappointed in the way the Chiefs lost this game, because I think the Lions are a solid team, and I think the Lions are going to be way better later in the year offensively. I think their running game, they didn't use the Gibbs kid as much as they could have, but they will. He's a rookie. Montgomery, I think, will get more used to what they're doing. They had a receiver have the drop season, Marvin Jones. The Lions were far from perfect last night, and they found a way to win the game. And the Lions also had nothing to lose. They had a fake punt on 4th-and-3 at their own 17. The Chiefs are not going to do that. They're the favorite. So that helps sometimes when you're trying to pull off an upset, but you can just kind of let it all go, although sometimes coaches do for a while, and then they pull back the reins. So the Lions, give them credit. They hung in there, and the pick six changed the momentum of the game. But at the end of the day, if Kadarius Toney makes a catch where he's wide open, the Chiefs are in field goal range. They're going to milk the clock down, and more than likely, they're going to get a chip shot field goal from Harrison Butker. And today, we'd be talking about Chiefs win 23-21. The Chiefs are so good. They won without Jones. They won without Kelsey. And they won with a whole bunch of mistakes and a whole bunch of drops and a pick six. That's how good the Chiefs are. Instead, the narrative is, oh, my God, what are we going to do when Kelsey retires? Oh, my God, we need Chris Jones immediately. Oh, my God, cut Kadarius Toney. What's Sky Moore? Trade him for a bag of potatoes. And we're freaking out about it. And Andy Reid, he's such a dunce because of his play calling on 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1, and Nagy. But if the Chiefs, if Kadarius Toney makes one catch last night, forget the one that he dropped that turned into a pick six. Allow that to happen. If he just makes the one catch on that last drive, the Chiefs more than likely win the game. That's it. On a night where they didn't play very well offensively, did nothing in the second half offensively, two field goals, that's it. Despite some questionable play calling, bad execution, Toney catches a wide open ball. The Chiefs are probably talking about a win today. That's how good this team actually is. Why did they not get blown out? That's why. They're so good that even when they lose and they beat themselves, they barely lose.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, they're their own worst opponent.
That all the time.
And every time, almost every time they lose, I sit here and say they beat themselves.
And like you, that's one of the things in sports that I probably hate saying the most.
I do
is
too.
That a team beat themselves
because you feel like you're disrespecting the other team. Yes.
But if you watch the Chiefs over the last 5 years with Patrick Mahomes as their starting quarterback, you can look at most of these games, and it's like they did something here or there that they were in position to win, should have won the game and beat themselves. And it's so many. I mean, really, if you can actually go back and look at the entire Andy Reid era, you don't even have to just the last 5 years, but if you look at the entire Andy Reid era, there's situations where they're like, Chiefs beat themselves. I mean, you're up 38-10 against the Colts in a playoff game and you lost, right? Like, there's so many things that you can look at. And I understand that, like, you have to make a comeback in those situations too, but it's just been so many times when we're coming on this show after a Chiefs loss and it's like, Andy overthought something, or you know, they had this lead and then they just buckled down and couldn't do anything, or got tight and you know, on their heels and things like that. So many times over the Andy Reid era that it's just like they beat themselves. I don't like saying it, but if it's true, it's true, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way the Chiefs are so many times.
Yep, agreed. So we'll move on and get ready for week 2 against Jacksonville. Chiefs fans, step back a second. I think you have a right to be frustrated and get riled up about the short yardage situation, because that's been a problem for a long time and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. You have a right to be complaining about that. Totally agree with you. You have a right to complain and scream that Kadarius Toney didn't catch a ball last night, or maybe he had one for 1 yard. You can scream about Sky Moore, but there's time for those guys to figure that out. And these are all, here's the thing that is encouraging. Despite all those mistakes, they barely lost, but to a good team. They're missing two studs. If they get one or both of them back, which I think at some point we expect both of them to be back, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to get better from that standpoint. And you can fix these little things fairly easily. Now, the short yardage, I think you can fix very easily. but you refused to quarterback sneak because you freaked out by one freak play that happened in Denver so many years ago. That's the easiest way to solve it. But that's the thing I think the Chiefs, the biggest thing that I don't know they're going to solve is the short yardage situation, because they haven't solved it in the course of a few years. I'm less worried about Tony and Moore than I am about why can't these guys figure out how to execute and get short yardage. That still baffles me. Joe Burrow has reached an agreement on a five-year, $275 million contract, which makes Joe Burrow the highest-paid player in NFL history. Well, Nick Bosa, I hope you enjoyed your time at the top for, what, a day? The extension also includes $219 million guaranteed. I don't know if you know the answer to this question, Dusty, but I'm going to throw it out at you and let the listeners at home play along here on the Sports Ticket. Do you know where Mahomes ranks now among quarterbacks in how much money he gets per year?
Oh, man. Is it like 11th or something?
Eighth.
I went too far.
He's barely in the top quarter of the league and being paid.
Yeah.
You don't think this guy's going to get a gigantic payday here in the next few years? And by the way, Joe Burrow, good quarterback, real good quarterback. Like his moxie, like him. He's beaten Mahomes a few times head-to-head, but he has no ring. He has no MVPs. Mahomes done way more than he's done in his career so far. If Joe Burrow's worth turning $75 million, how much is Patrick Mahomes worth?
Hey,
5 years, $275 million. I think
$500 million. No.
I said this before. Because what is that? That's 52 and 53 million, 55 million. How much is that? 275 divided by.
God, obviously,
I need a calculator.
It's 55, yeah.
It's 55, okay.
Yeah.
If Joe Burrow's worth 55 million, Mahomes is worth 70. At least. But we shall see.
350 million?
At least. Yeah. He's already half a billion dollar man, yeah. Because he had the 10-year deal.
490 over 10 looks like...
Oh, it looks cheap. Looks very cheap. We said at the time that...
Oh, yeah,
be,
for sure.
Everybody's like, well, not everybody, a few people. Mahomes needs to take less money, take this big discount. He's playing at a discount right now.
Yeah.
And he's not griping about it like Chris Jones, is he? NFL games this weekend, the Panthers at the Falcons, Texans at the Ravens, Bengals at the Browns, Jaguars at the Colts, the Buccaneers are at the Vikings, Titans at the Saints, Niners are at the Steelers, Commanders host the Cardinals, Packers at the Bears, Jordan Love makes his debut as the starting quarterback for the Packers, Raiders at the Broncos, Dolphins at the Chargers, Eagles at the Patriots, Rams at the Seahawks, Cowboys at the Giants, Sunday Night Football, and Monday night should be a good one, Aaron Rodgers versus Josh Allen, the Bills at the Jets, Rodgers makes his Jets debut. This is just in, breaking sports news in case you care about it or not, but Team USA in basketball just lost to Germany 113-111 in the semifinals. Now, they've qualified for the Olympics, but they are out of, what is it, the cup or whatever it is they're playing in?
FIBA World Championships or something like the World Cup. Yeah,
they lost a game in pool play or bracket pool, yeah, pool play, but they're still qualified, and now they just lost to Germany by 2. So they are done, lost in the semis, but they did qualify for the Olympics, so they got a lot of work to do to bring back the gold in Paris.
Yeah, they're going to have to put a better team together. There's no question about that if they want to win the gold in Paris.
Yes, I think you're probably right about that.
They're going to have people step up and play.
Kansas has their second straight Friday night game as they host Illinois tonight. Both teams are 1-0. Illinois with a last-second field goal beat Toledo last week. KU rolled in the second half and got past Missouri State 48-17. They take on Illinois. First meeting between the two schools in football since 1968. Illinois last year was 8-5. Of course, former assistant for K-State Brett Bielema is the head coach of the Illini, and he's turned that program around, which we figured he probably would. Lance Leibel expects a challenge from the Illini tonight. Kickoff 6:30 on ESPN2.
Extremely physical. Defensive is highly impressive. They lost some guys to the NFL, but they're still well-coached, physical defense. The safety that returned it was just he was a receiver. They moved a corner and then moved to safety. You know, he had the big pick six for him. It seems very comfortable back there. So this will be a big challenge for us.
All right, what do you think tonight? Kansas and Illinois. I didn't get to see week one's game because they play on a Friday. I won't see tonight's game either because they're playing on a Friday. K-State will play on a Friday against Oklahoma State, a conference game on a Friday night in Stillwater. Get used to these things. I'm not going to get used to it. I'm telling you to get used to it, but I won't get used to it. I don't like it. There'll be Big 12 games on Thursday nights in football, just like basketball's gone from used to be, hey, they play on a Wednesday, and there's some big Monday, and there's Saturday. And now K-State, I think, played seven or eight straight Tuesdays last year. Yeah. And then you're a K-State fan, and you got tied to high school basketball like Dusty. You don't get to even see them play for half their conference season. Don't get me started. Don't even get me started. But I can't change it. So it's KU and Illinois tonight. Jalen Daniels expected to go. He did not play week one against Missouri State. Listen, if KU wants to get to the 8-win total that Brian Haney has predicted, the voice of the Jayhawks, who was with us yesterday on the show, if you missed that podcast, it's on KDCountry94.com, Sports Ticket Podcast. He said he thought KU was going to go 8-4 this year. That was his prediction. Granted, it could change. He said the floor he thought was 6-6. I disagree. I think the floor is lower than that. He said the ceiling's 10-2. I disagree. I don't think the ceiling is that high. I do think 8-4 is doable, though, but some things are going to have to go right. And one of those things is going to have to be Jalen Daniels staying healthy, in my opinion. But also, in order to go 8-4, I think you have to win tonight.
Oh, yeah, 100%. You got to win as many non-conference games as possible in this conference, where any game, I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. It's like there's not a team in the Big 12 like you, that you're like, this is going to roll over for you. And there's also not a team in the Big 12 that you think is just like, I can't beat this team.
Yeah.
Right? It's just like, even Texas is like,
I don't think they're invincible.
Like, people think they're the best in the conference every year, and they don't ever, that doesn't play out. So
they're like the Chargers of the NFL.
Yeah. We can look at this conference, and if you want to be in contention for any kind of great bowl game or a great season, like a continuing on the right projection here for Kansas to go to 8-4 after mm-hmm. 6-6 year last year, these are the games you absolutely have to win. Like, and these are the games that I think are going to be issues for KU sometimes this year, and that's why I picked them to go 5-7. I don't know anything about either one of these teams right now, to be completely honest with you. I didn't see Kansas play. I didn't see Illinois play mm-hmm. Saturday. I'm gonna pick Illinois to win the game tonight by a field goal.
That's not
based on anything I know about the teams. It's just a gut thing. These are the games you have to win. K-State lost to Tulane last year and still won a Big 12 championship
game.
True. But, if you're going to make that jump and you're trying to continue what you started, then this is the type of game you win.
Well, and the other thing, too, is there are expectations this year for KU. Now, if you win this game, it could springboard you into a pretty good year. That's why I think it's so important tonight. Now, if they lose, like you said, it's not the end of the world. You lose to Illinois, they're a good team, you learn something about yourself, and it might help you down the line in Big 12 play. And as you said, there isn't a team that's dominant in this conference. I still think K-State's the best team in the Big 12 right now. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what I believe. I think Texas and them are the two best teams. I agree with the preseason poll. And I think Oklahoma's going to be quite a bit improved. That would be my top three.
Yeah.
But after that, TCU has questions. Texas Tech, I did not buy in, and they lost last week, and now they got Oregon coming to town. So TCU has problems. Texas Tech has some issues. Oklahoma State has lots of questions. Iowa State, this would be the year where they finally figure something out when they have low expectations. High expectations, they seem to choke early in the year. Houston didn't look very good. Central Florida is a team that might be a surprise and do better than some people think. Cincinnati lost.
I think Cincinnati's going to be better than...
Well, they lost a ton from last year.
Yeah, but it's just like when you look at their schedule, who they're playing, they're going to finish higher than people think.
That could be, yeah.
Because they're picked really, really low.
Yeah, and they lost a ton from last year, but you're right, their schedule is fairly friendly to them. And then BYU, I don't think is, they're decent. So there's not a horrible team in this conference, but as you said, there's not this one that you think is invincible that you can't play with, or you need to play your A game and they need to play their C game to win. No, I don't think there's anybody in this league that's that way. So along those lines of thinking, then that means KU, yeah, why can't KU go 8-4?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'll tell you why I don't think they go 8-4 or 9-3 or 10-2, and I think it's their defense.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it. I think this defense on paper is worse than last year. They don't have Lonnie Phillips. I don't know who's going to be their edge rusher, who's going to get pressure on the quarterback. I think the secondary is good, but if their secondary's got to cover for 7 seconds, no secondary is good.
Mm-hmm.
So I just can't buy into KU without seeing the defense being improved. And we will learn more about their defense tonight against Illinois. K-State's at home tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. on FS1 hosting Troy. Both teams are 1-0. Troy's won 12 straight games coming into Manhattan. Chris Kleiman, you know, he's had these issues losing a game from time to time early in the year against a group of five opponent. That's what Troy is. Kleiman on the reason for Troy's success.
They won a number of close games last year. So when you get into a fourth quarter game with these guys, which I firmly believe is going to be a four quarter game, these guys are going to really believe that they can win because they've done it before. When they have a veteran quarterback that's played a ton of football, so the moment's not going to be too big for him. The stage isn't, all those things, because he's been in big environments and he's played big in big games. They'll be ready for our environment they face.
We're going to learn a lot more about K-State tomorrow against a much better opponent in Troy. K-State, last I checked, was favored by 15.5. That line may have moved. I think K-State will eventually pull away and win this game, but it is a bit of a scary game. It's an 11 a.m. game, as Wyatt Thompson said when I listened to the broadcast coming back in the post game last Saturday. He said, you know, those early games sometimes can be the ones that trip you up. K-State's dealt with this before, 11 a.m. game. You talked about Tulane and others. So this is a dangerous game for K-State, and then you might, and you look ahead to Missouri in Columbia playing an SEC team who you dominated last year at home in Manhattan. So we are going to learn more about this team because everything went so swimmingly great in week one. They're going to have some ups and downs within this game tomorrow.
Absolutely. I think people get caught up in looking at the name and saying, no, it's not a Power 5 school. And if you do that, I mean, that's it's obvious that you saw what happened with Tulane last year where they just couldn't get things going. They had so many issues, just could not get flow at all offensively. And so if Troy comes in and like Coach Kleiman says, if this is a close game, I don't like it if it's a close game in the fourth quarter, right? If it's if they go into the game fourth quarter tied or even K-State steps up like three, like I don't like it. And so, but I have this gut feeling that it's going to be that kind of game. And, you know, K-State's going to have to make the plays down the stretch and I don't know, maybe pull away. I don't think they're going to cover. I'm going to say like a 34-24 type game.
Okay. Yeah, I could buy that. I would go with that. 11 a.m. tomorrow on FS1. Other top games in the Big 12 feature future member number 12 Utah at Baylor at 11 o'clock. Iowa State hosts Iowa at 2:30. Number 11 Texas at number 3 Alabama at 6. Texas Tech hosts number 13 Oregon at 6. Oklahoma State travels Arizona State at 9:30 for a full look at the schedule because it's bigger than normal because there are 14
schools.
It's
so crazy doing that for the Express and putting all the new games in, and next year's going to be even bigger.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, and you almost run out of room on the page. Absolutely.
You have to change the font to smaller font to get it all on one page.
And as we get older, it's harder to read that smaller font, as I've noticed. There's a huge game tomorrow in primetime, apparently. 11 a.m. tomorrow morning on Fox. Number 22, Colorado, who is now a 3-point favorite. So early return was Nebraska was a favorite. It's like, how? Especially when the game's in Boulder. Nebraska, Colorado. I think John Bowden will be completely useless tomorrow.
Yes.
And John, I mean this with all respect. John does a great job, superintendent now at the Bullitt Country Club, did a great job at the Smith Center golf course for many years. John's a great person, a good friend of ours, and tomorrow John will be completely worthless. And I say this because, well, he might be worth something until 11 a.m., but once 11 a.m. kicks in, John Bowden, he's going to be glued to this TV set, and he's going to let every Nebraska fan know when Colorado beats them tomorrow, as I predict they will, and Nebraska will start 0-2 in the Matt Rhule era, that, and then if Colorado loses, John's worthless after that too. Kind of like me after the Chiefs lose, I'm worthless. I ain't doing nothing. I'm sorrow. I'm in my own pity, right? Wallowing in my own pity. So, you know, John Bowden may go, well, you know, we lost to Nebraska. You know, we're working on building something here with Prime. But the fact that they would lose to Nebraska of all people in Colorado, in Boulder, John is going to not, that ain't going to go well tomorrow for him and any other Buffalo fan. However, if they win, John's still going to be worthless after that because he's going to be so happy and he's going to be busy letting all the Nebraska fans know. Plus, I hear he has a wager or two with some Nebraska fans.
I was just going to add to that because if it's just a loss tomorrow, he's going to wallow, but it's going to get worse for him.
Yes, right.
If they lose.
Right. So John, I hope you get everything you need accomplished on your list of things to do by 11 a.m. tomorrow morning. And it should be an interesting game. I just don't think Nebraska's got the firepower to stay with Colorado. I really don't. Here is Deion Sanders on learning about the Nebraska rivalry.
Rivalries are rivalries. There's some more severe than others. I think everywhere you go coach, from high school on up or from youth league on up, you're going to have rivalries. And just learning the dynamics of the different rivalries, I like it. It's delightful. So I've learned the severity, the serious nature of this rivalry, and I'm embracing it 100%. This is personal. That's the message of the week. This is personal.
Colorado and Nebraska played every year. They shared a conference from 1947 to 2010. The Huskers lead all-time series 49-20-2. Buffalo's won the last meeting between the two schools, 34-31 in 2019. Even though it was just 4 years ago, there are no remnants of those Buffaloes to be found in 2023. Dion is a third coach for the program at Colorado in football since 2019. So there's hardly anybody within Nebraska and Colorado that are apart. Of course, Nebraska's the, you know, had Scott Frost, and now they have Matt Rhule as their near head coach. And speaking of Matt Rhule, his team needs a bounce back and respond after a tough loss in their season opener at Minnesota.
I have no concerns about our guys ever responding. I think 2021, 2022, there's some times with some tough losses where they didn't respond great. I never worry about that with this group. That is the challenge, you know. And then once you get to the game this week, we're going to have to respond. We're going to have to respond to their tempo, you know, the early surge of the game. We're going to have to respond to, you know, it's going to be an electric environment, all the things around the game. But, you know, once the game starts, it's really about what happens in between the white lines. And we got a lot of guys who played a lot of football.
Listen, after watching Colorado play against a good team, at least a solid team, I don't know how good TCU is going to be, and watching Nebraska play Minnesota, who I don't think is going to be that good. I think they'll be decent, but I don't think they're going to be great. And seeing the problems Nebraska had on offense last week, and I know Colorado struggled on defense, don't get me wrong, but I see some of the decision-making by Jeff Sims, their quarterback, against Minnesota. He can't make those mistakes if Nebraska is going to win tomorrow in Boulder. And I just, it might be a shootout, and it'll be fun and entertaining. I hope it's a close competitive game. But I just don't see Nebraska winning this game. And it's crazy because all Colorado's done is won one game, and maybe that's just they played great, and they were so emotional first game under Dion, and they're going to come down to earth against the rival. But the fact that it's a rivalry keeps them focused. If this was not a rivalry game, I would feel a lot better about Nebraska. Dion's playing it up, he wants to build off this momentum. I just don't see the firepower for Nebraska to win this game. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, Colorado's not going to stay this high all year.
No, they're
like
not.
So it's going to be interesting to me when that hits, like when that reality is like, oh yeah, we're outstanding offensively in game one and something's not clicking anymore. And yeah, Nebraska's going to be a better defense, I think, than what they saw last week. TCU's obviously struggled defensively back half of last year and then obviously coming into this year too. So but yeah, I don't think they have the firepower if it does get into a game where it, you know, in the 30s, 40s, things like that. It's just, I don't think Nebraska has what it takes to finish a game and win that.
I don't either. Number one, Georgia is taking on Ball State. Number five, Ohio State against Youngstown State. Penn State, number seven, against Delaware, so no good games there. Number 10, Notre Dame is at North Carolina State. That could be decent, 11 a.m. tomorrow. And who else we got? Number two, Michigan hosts UNLV. And anybody else that's noteworthy? Oh, Austin Peay goes to Tennessee. Tennessee's ranked ninth. SMU is at number 18, Oklahoma. Oklahoma scored 73 last week against a horrible, horrible Central Arkansas team. And, of course, the marquee game I already mentioned, and that is number 3, Alabama hosting number 11, Texas. Number 6, USC hosting Stanford out in the Pac-12. MIAA football last night. Despite Todd Clover wearing his Fort Hays State shirt, my Pittsburgh State Gorillas, and I am a proud Gorilla alum, they smoked Fort Hays State 40-14. Sorry, Tiger alums out there. Pitt State, no, I'm not. Pitt State won 40-14. Pitt State off to a 2-0 start. Missouri Southern beat Washburn 30-23. Washburn's 0-2. And how about this? Emporia State beat Northwest Missouri State 33-13. Northwest Missouri State rarely loses, let alone lose by 20 and at home. That is a big result from last
week. Yeah, I saw like the late score. It was like 26-7 after three, I think, or something like that. Emporia was leading, and I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? Like, this doesn't look right. And, yeah. I don't know if Northwest lost a lot of people or what. I don't know what their situation is. Obviously, I don't follow it real, real close.
I believe Northwest Missouri State, if I saw on the social media Twitter accounts, that they had some turnovers last night. They turned the ball over a lot, from what I understand. By the way, this is an update. Chiefs wide receiver Kadarius Toney has deleted his Twitter X account. That's probably a good decision. He was talking smack towards Giants fans, and boy, the Giants fans let him know about his game, as did Chiefs fans, after he played so poorly last night. I'll share the story and then we'll get into tennis and the Royals to finish our big crescendo Royals. So I wear a Chiefs shirt usually or a jersey when I'm watching the Chiefs. It's not that I'm superstitious. It's just, I like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, last week homecoming was wear a jersey to school day. And my wife had the audacity, and you know my wife, she's a horrible person to deal with. I'm kidding, people. I'm joking. So my wife asked me, do you have a jersey that I could wear to school? It's jersey day for homecoming week. And then she mentioned the Mahomes jersey, and I said, that's the only jersey, Mahomes jersey I got. It's gold. I got a heck of a deal for $40. And no, dear, love you, but hell no. That ain't happening. So then she asked, I said, ask your son. He's got some basketball jerseys. He has a Tatum jersey, a Jordan North Carolina jersey. He's got a Steph Curry jersey. By the way, before you start thinking he's got tons of money, he found this deal through a friend of his, and he got three of those jerseys for like $90 or $100. And they're pretty well done, too, by the way. So my wife ended up wearing the Jason Tatum one because he's like, you're not wearing the North Carolina white one, Mom. That's Jordan. I'm like, high five. So today I put on my gold Mahomes jersey, and my wife looks at me as I'm leaving the house, and she says, they lost. And I look at her like, pardon me? She goes, the Chiefs, they lost last night. I said, I know. I still support my team, win or lose. And she goes, I know. So for you Chiefs fans freaking out about last night, you should still wear your Chiefs gear today. Don't act like you're embarrassed. Mahomes says he's embarrassed a little bit. But listen, wear it with pride. You still got the best organization in football, the best organization right now in the National Football League. You got the marquee player in the league and so forth and so on. And you do also have a right tackle that many people felt was offsides every single play last night. Now, I've seen some people explain that technically, within the letter of certain rules, he is okay. Terry McCauley said during the broadcast, he's not even remotely close to where he should be. And I'm sitting here and I'm going, why are we surprised by this? He did it at Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And against the Chiefs in the playoff game, I noticed it. I think we talked about it.
He's not lined up right. He's jumping early, too. Like, there's so many times there could be false starts.
Absolutely. And he did that for Jacksonville last year. But I remember Dee Ford's being offsides clearly in the 18 AFC title game. And I remember we talked in this very show. I said, everybody's freaking about Dee Ford, and he lined up offsides. And you say, how can he be lined up offsides? I said, the right and left tackle, the Patriots aren't legal. They're not on the line of scrimmage. That should be an offsides. That should be a formation penalty. And it never was called against the Patriots throughout that game. And so when people sit here and say Juwan Taylor is lined up in the backfield, there's a lot of tackles that are lined up in the backfield. The Patriots did it years ago. And nobody called it. Now, the difference to me is Juwan Taylor seems to be moving.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he might have one right. He might have half his body and off the line of scrimmage. He might have his right foot all the way in the backfield. But that's still legal, and the Patriots got away with that. I don't think it should be legal. I think you should be on the line of scrimmage. That, to me, it really isn't. And Taylor might be going stretching a little further than some of those other tackles I talked about. But he even moves on top of that, yeah. I think, early. And so, yeah, I think in Jacksonville, you don't think they're going to be talking about this? They know him well, better as anybody. Sure. Going to week two, how many offsides, false starts will Juwan Taylor have coming up next Sunday in Jacksonville? I mean, that's going to be – it was a talking point during the game, talking point on social media. And you don't think Juwan Taylor is going to be – the officials are alerted to this and are going to supposedly be told to call this on him? And if they do, isn't that going to mess him up at right tackle against Jacksonville? I mean, I think that's a legitimate concern going into a Jacksonville game is you got a right tackle that's been able to do this, whether it's actually legal or not. If officials deem it to be illegal, how's he going to adjust? And then he's slower getting off the line, and all of a sudden now – guys can come off the edge, got a better chance of getting to Mahomes and hitting him from the, you know, knocking the ball free, causing a key turnover in the game. And if anybody knows how Juwan Taylor operates, it's the Jaguars, because he played for the Jaguars the last few years, and she's picked him up as a free agent, gave him $20 million a year.
Yeah.
But to me, with the naked eye watching it live, and by the way, I saw this in preseason too, and nobody talked about it. You know, Ari, whoever his name is, the play-by-play guy, and Trent Green would never talk. I didn't hear him talk one time about how Juwan Taylor's moving early every time. So I'm like, he's doing the same thing he did in preseason, same thing he did in Jacksonville. And like Collinsworth said, well, if you're allowed to do it, you're allowed to do it. Power to him to keep doing it. But my question is he going to get called for it? And then how does that mess him up mentally? And what adjustments can he make? Because obviously he wouldn't do it if he didn't think it would help him.
Yeah. It's funny because I wasn't even thinking about it until I saw somebody mention that, like maybe third quarter, like he did this at Jacksonville too. And then it just clicked in my mind. I remember that playoff game last year, like, just yelling at my TV screen like, he's false starting every time. Why are you not calling it? And it's just like, I remembered after they said he did this in Jacksonville last year. I'm like, that was the game that I remember.
He did.
I was just screaming at the TV like, he's false starting every time. Call the dang false start. But this is it. Yeah, that could be an issue there in Jacksonville. That's the thing, though, is like, Detroit needs to get in the official's ear and say, hey, watch 74.
Well, don't you think they were, though? I mean, they're not stupid.
I would hope, but you would think they would actually do something about it.
Well, but how could the Lions
I mean, the officials, if they're in their ear.
Right.
And it was like, we were talking about it in the group, and it was like, he's cheating. And he's also jumping.
I mean, he's like, lined up, he's moving early.
But if they're not calling, that's not my problem if they're not calling.
That's
it. I can't do anything about that. The Chiefs can't do anything about that. You can complain all you want, but the officials need to, do their job and call it.
Right.
And the one on the last drive was so egregious that they had to call it.
That was an obvious one.
But some of those are timing things, and I remember them actually replaying some of those plays last year at Jacksonville, and he actually wasn't early. Like, he was right at the snap of the ball. It just looks weird because the other offensive linemen are like 0.2 seconds later, right? And even that little bit of time looks like a false start, but he's so quick and on it that it's not. But he'll get called for it in Jacksonville. I'm pretty confident of that. If it is an issue from the start, and I don't know why it wouldn't be. That's just what he does.
Hey, there are some smart people on Twitter apparently listening to the show. Christopher, for as bad as the KC wide receivers played, Tony catches the pass on the final drive. Chiefs are in field goal range with 2:20 left. That was a bigger play than the pick six. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And the pick six, those things happen. The Chiefs, their drops last night, there were four. Three came on third down. See, that was what made it bad, too, there on third down. And then the deflected one for the pick six. It's the third most drops since 2012 for the Chiefs. And that was a year before Andy Reid became head coach. So that's the worst amount of drops the Chiefs have ever had from their wide receivers or since Andy Reid's taken over at Kansas City.
Yeah.
So do you think this is going to keep happening? I would say probably not. I would say probably not.
No, I hope not. But I don't think it'll be that bad. I can think of four in my brain, but they're probably not all considered drops.
Right.
But it's just like, that was rough.
Have you seen this is pretty funny. I remember that Jets player. I don't know if it was Hard Knocks or whatever. But he goes to the Jets facility and he's locked out.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've got people saying, "There's Tony arriving at the Chiefs facility this morning. He's locked out of the facility." I thought that was pretty funny. In tennis, the U.S. Women's Open is final is set, and you got an American. We have two Americans or one?
It should have been two.
Okay.
But it's just one. Coco Gauff, she was hot to start last night, and then she won the first set, and then there was a 49-minute delay because there's some climate change people protesting, and one dude glued his feet to the concrete.
Well, that seems logical.
Yeah. She was up 1-0, and then all of a sudden everybody's leaving. I had it on mute because I was watching the Chiefs. I'm like, what's going on?
Uh-huh.
And then I see all this stuff about protests. She won the second set. Madison Keys won the first set 6-0 against Sabalenka and then lost two straight in tie breaks. Yeah,
she should have won.
Should have been Keys and Gauff, but it's
All-American final.
Gauff should've and been. Sabalenka.
And then Novak Djokovic takes on unseeded American Ben Shelton, who's only 20, just a year removed from, I think, playing at Florida. And then Carlos Alcaraz and Daniel Medvedev, they'll play in the nightcap at 6 o'clock tonight. So an afternoon. I wish Novak and Ben Shelton were playing, well, not tonight, I guess, because I'd be doing high school anyway, so it doesn't matter. And after having last night off, the Royals are back on the field, in case you care, against the Blue Jays at 6:07. Royals 44-97, Toronto 77-63. They're holding on to the second wildcard spot by a half a game in the American League, so the Royals are playing the role of spoiler. And just to let you know that I am doing my thorough research and still worry about what's going on with the Royals, their starting pitcher tonight will be Colin Snyder. So he's not a starting pitcher. So the Royals are
that's your opener tonight, Colin Snyder.
I would assume Greinke. Is it Greinke's turn to come out? I mean, he's been coming out of the bullpen. They have an opener last couple times with Greinke. Greinke's last outing didn't strike out a single guy. So he ain't getting the 3,000 strikeouts this year. And then will he come back and get 3,000 last year and then retire and drop the mic? I have no idea. But the Royals playing out the string, take on the Blue Jays in the first of three tonight, and that is in Toronto. So we don't have to worry about Whit Merrifield being vaccinated this time, do we? he plays with the Blue Jays, so he clearly is. Okay, I'll move on and get over that. Have a great great weekend. Stay safe. Enjoy your football. Enjoy high school football tonight. Rock Hills at Thunder Ridge on KD Country 94. Beloit at Southeast Lean on Z96.3 The Lake. Our coverage starts with the Express at 540. It concludes with the State Farm Local High School Scoreboard Show at 10:05.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.